his eyes, and he saw Esau coming with 400 men. And Jacob, he took his wives and their children, and he separated them. He separated Leah and Rachel and the two handmaids with their children. And he put the two handmaids with their children foremost, and then he put Leah with her six sons and one daughter next to them, and then Rachel and her son. He then separated his family, and he went ahead of his family. He went in the front of them all, and he went to meet Esau. This must have been a very critical moment for Jacob. This was the moment that he had been praying about, which he had so many fears about. And when he seen his brother coming to him with 400 men, we cannot even imagine what must have been going on in his mind. For he was afraid that he was going to meet him as his enemy. And he had prayed to God that God would deliver him out of the hand of his brother Esau. And now it was a question now whether God was going to answer this prayer or not. And Jacob, he went ahead of his family, and he bowed himself to the earth 7 times. He made obeisance to his brother Esau. His brother Esau was the eldest, and he had been the one who he had offended, and he came upon his knees 7 times. This is the correct way, my hearers. When we have offended anyone, when we have any differences with each other, it is the best place to be humbled, to be the least. In this way, we may likewise grant the person that has been offended that we see and they see in us that there is no enmity in us. To remember the matters, to keep speaking about the matters, we never patch the matter up. It is the best thing to do, to humble ourselves. Humility is a precious grace, and we see this in Jacob. We see it all through the Bible, that even God honors humility. You remember the story about Ahab, that wicked king. There wasn't a more wicked king on the earth than him. And when Elijah told him what was going to come upon him and upon his wife and upon his seed, then we read very distinctly that Ahab, he humbled himself before God. He went into sackcloth and ashes and walked softly. And God said unto Elijah, "Seest thou how that Ahab humbleth himself before me? I will not bring the evil upon him in his time, but in the time of his sons." God then saw even this outward humility of Ahab. He likewise seen Jacob in his humility, kneeling down to his brother 7 times. It was God that gave Jacob to do this. Has he ever humbled any one of you, my hearers? Oh, the Apostle Peter teaches us, "Humble thyself under the mighty hand of God, and he shall exalt thee in due time." And now we not only see this man Jacob humbled, but we see God humbling Esau, who Jacob feared greatly. And when Esau saw Jacob, he ran to meet him, and he embraced him, and he kissed him, and he fell on his neck, and they wept. Never had Jacob expected such a meeting with his brother. It was a wonder of God to Jacob. He seen in that an answer to his prayer, that God had won his brother over. God has every heart in his hands. He can make the greatest enemy that we have a friend in one moment. We have instances thereof in the Bible. We have that wicked King Saul, who was David's enemy, who was pursuing David, seeking to slay him. And when he had taken a place in a cave, and David had likewise stolen his sword from him while he was sleeping, then we see David calling unto Saul. And Saul, he spake unto David, "Thou art better than I am," he says. "Oh, David, come back to the palace. Let us be friends again, and I will do thee no wrong." Saul, that wicked king who was seeking to kill him. And we see this taking place likewise with another Saul in a spiritual sense. Saul on the way to Damascus, an enemy to God, who had slain and helped kill many of the Christians. He likewise was deeply humbled before God on this way to Damascus, and brought to his knees to cry, "Lord, what wilt thou have me to do?" Oh, it's a good place to be, my hearers. May God humble every one of you, if he has never done it. Jacob, he received then something that he had never expected. His brother ran to meet him, and never did Esau intend to do this either. You make up your mind on this. It was God that caused him to run and to receive his brother and to forgive his brother and to show with every sign and emotion that it was sincere, that it was upright on the part of Esau. And then they wept, it says. Oh, probably Jacob wept for joy. Why? Because he's seen his prayer answered. Because he had never expected his brother to run to him and kiss him like he did. And maybe Esau, he wept because he was ashamed of himself, that he had such intentions of doing something to Jacob, and now he was moved inwardly. He couldn't give any reasons why. It probably was a wonder to him, too. He ran to meet him, and he embraced him, and he kissed him. Oh, my hearers, in this we have something similar, like we read about the parable of the lost, or the parable of the son that ran away from home, from his father. Oh, we have in that parable something like this. The father running out to meet the son and embracing him. Oh, has God ever run out to meet any of you, my hearers? Has he ever embraced you? Has he ever kissed you? Oh, what a wonder this is, my hearers, when this takes place. It was a wonder between these two brothers. And we find that Esau, he wanted to know who they were that were with Jacob. And Jacob, he presented his family to Esau. He presented first the two handmaids with their two sons each. And then he presented Leah with her six sons and one daughter. And then he presented Rachel with her one son, Joseph. And he says, "These are the children that God hath graciously given to thy servant." He didn't say, "These are my sons, these are my daughters, these are my wives." No. He gave God the honor that God had given him these children. And now we find that Esau, he wanted to know what he meant with that drove of cattle that was ahead of them. Well, Jacob said, "This was a present unto you, that I may find grace in thy sight. Take it," he says unto him. No, Esau says, "I have enough, Jacob. Keep it to yourself." Esau, he was likewise a great man in Mount Seir. He was a wealthy man, and he had much of this world's goods. He had a lot of authority over people. He had become a great man there, and he had enough. But Jacob pressed him and said unto him, "It is as if I have seen," he says, "the face of God when you ran to meet me. Take this present," he says. And he urged him, and he took it to him. Jacob said, "God hath dealt graciously with me. Therefore, he could likewise say, I have enough. Take it," he says unto Esau. And him urging Esau, Esau took the present. Now, who had the most? Esau or Jacob? I think Jacob did. Esau could not say, God hath dealt graciously with me. That was enough for Jacob. He was rich with what God has dealt graciously with him. Although he had been blessed providentially, and he had a large family, and he had much cattle and much herd, still, God has dealt graciously with me. Oh, God had been good to Jacob. God had met him when he left his father's house. God gave him a dream at Bethel. God appeared unto him above the ladder. God spoke unto him and promised him that he would be with him and that he would keep him and that he would bring him back into the land of Canaan, and he would not leave him nor forsake him until he had fulfilled his word. And Jacob had experienced the fulfilling of his word. God had visited Jacob many times, even while he was by Laban. The Lord then had likewise granted unto him only the night before that blessed assurance that God was his God for time and eternity. How rich then was Jacob in this sense of the word, God hath dealt graciously with me. All my hearers, Jacob had it much better than Esau, even though Esau might have had more providentially than Jacob had. Or hath any of yous been given that God hath dealt graciously with you? Has he ever come in your life? Has he given you a Bethel meeting? Has he ever given you a sign or a token that he has grace in store for you unto the end of your life and then glory hereafter? Has he ever given you a hope of this, my hearers? Irrespective of how poor you may be and how little of this world's goods you may have, you are rich, my hearers, rich beyond expression, if you may be one of God's dear children. So was Jacob. Jacob have I loved. Why? Why? Was there anything in Jacob that caused God to love him? Nothing whatsoever. The only reason we can give for that is God's sovereignty, God's eternal choice. Jacob have I loved. Esau have I hated. What makes this? Esau have I hated. God's sovereignty again. Is there then unrighteousness in God? God forbid. Has he not said, I will have mercy upon whom I will have mercy, and I will harden whom I will harden? There is no unrighteousness in God. Hath not the potter the power over the clay to make one vessel to honor and another to dishonor? Jacob was one that he made to honor, and he left Esau. Oh, how many are wealthy in this life, gain much of this world, and possess many things that other people never will possess. But God has not dealt graciously with them. Oh, my hearer, you better be a pauper. You better be a naked beggar somewhere on a street and have God deal graciously with you than to have all the riches of this world, and when you die, you have to leave him, and you got to go and meet an angry God, and you got to stand before him. Oh, terrible, terrible it will be, my hearers. And you may be thinking at this present time, well, what can I do about it? The thought comes to you, I'm sure. You just explained to us, Jacob have I loved, Esau have I hated. Suppose now God hates me. Oh, my hearers, we know not who God loves. We know not who God hates. That's an impossibility from our side to know this. Our point is to seek the Lord while he is yet to be found, to call upon him while he is yet near. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts, and let him return unto the Lord, and to our God, who abundantly pardon. Have you tried it? Oh, I would graciously insist that you would try this, my hearers. The God who speaks the truth and never tells a lie. He is faithful to his word. Take him by his word. Come to him with his word, and you will find him to be true to his very word. And now we find these two brothers. They are united together. You don't hear him talk one word about what had taken place between them. Not one word is said to Jacob what he'd done to Esau 20 years back. No. This is not the way to keep peace, because if we bring the matter up again, it separates very friends. And now we find these two brothers, the one Esau, he wanted to go along with Jacob. He wanted to stay with him. He had 400 men with him. He says, let me go before you. No, Jacob says, the children are very young, and the flocks, and I have much young cattle, and we have to go very softly and very slowly. You go ahead, Esau. Well, then let me let some of my men with you so that they may go with you. No, that's not necessary, he says to his brother. I have found grace in thy sight, and that's sufficient for me. So he promised that he would come behind Esau to go to Mount Seir. And Esau left that day to go to Mount Seir. Now, whether Jacob ever went to Mount Seir is a question that is not answered in the Bible. For we read that Jacob continued on his journey, and he came into the land of Canaan, and he came to a place called Succoth. There he pitched his tents, and there they remained for a time. Probably he did visit his brother Esau in Mount Seir, but it is not written, it's not recorded. Although it says here that he would follow him and go there. From here, we will leave off to come to the lesson of today. There are three chapters in between this, which also are connected with the history of Jacob's life, which I will not enter into at the present time. But we will come to the story of Joseph. We find in the 37th chapter that Jacob is dwelling in the land of Canaan, and these are the generations of Jacob. Joseph was 17 years of age, and he was with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, taking care of their father's flock. He was a shepherd boy, Joseph. We have here then Jacob dwelling in the land of Canaan, in the land which his father had been a stranger in. His father was still living, Isaac. Isaac, you know, he became 180 years of age. But this story of Joseph begins 12 years prior to the death of Isaac. Jacob is now 108 years of age. His son Joseph was born when he was 91 years old. And now we find this man, Jacob, having this son, Joseph. And it says, Jacob loved Joseph more than all his other sons because he was the son of his old age. Now, this wasn't true because he had another son yet, Benjamin, right? He was younger than Joseph, and he was the son of his old age. But Benjamin must have been a little tot. And now Joseph was 17 years of age. And he was a comfort to his father because he had lost his mother, and Jacob had lost his wife, Rachel. And this young boy, Joseph, he took care of his father. He paid more attention to his father than the other sons did. And I believe that he loved him because he saw in Joseph what he did not see in his other sons. He saw in him the tokens and signs of the grace of God. And now this Jacob, he made him a coat of many colors, it says. Not only did Jacob show that he loved his son Joseph more than the other ones, but he showed it outwardly too. Now, Jacob had bred his children to work. Although he was the darling of his father, was beloved of his father, he was a shepherd. He had to take care of the sheep. Now this teaches us, if we have children, that we should breed them and bring them up, that they may labor, that they may enter into some business, that they may be something and useful in the world. But when we bring up a child to do nothing, it usually happens that the child becomes no good. This Joseph, being a shepherd boy, teaches us likewise that we should see, if we have children, that they have the right occupation in life, that they shouldn't be idle. When we leave our children to themselves, because we love them, if we fondle them, they are sure to be spoiled. And now Jacob, he had his sons taking care of his cattle, and Joseph was with them. But he did not govern his children in the right manner in this way, for he showed partiality to this one boy, Joseph. He loved him above all the others. And he showed it outwardly, too, by putting upon him a coat of many colors. Are you parents? Do you have children? There's wisdom necessary to bring them up. You know, we love all our children. Inwardly, they're all the same to us. But outwardly, they all have their natures. One is agreeable, it smiles, it's willing to do what you ask it to do. It's an obedient child, and you find that child to be a loving child. And it is. If it obeys you and does its duty, then you are being rewarded with the love that you showed to this child. But if you have a child that's disobedient, that grumbles all the time, has a long face and will not obey you, it takes patience and it takes wisdom to treat that child just as the one that is obedient to you. No partiality. You know, children are quick to notice things. Very quick. If you give one child something, you don't give the other child it, it notices it immediately. But these brethren, when they seen that their father loved Joseph more than they did all the children, and he gave him a red coat, a coat of many colors, it says, they hated him the more. For me and you, we would think, well, why should they hate Joseph? They should have hated their father. He was the one that was doing this. He showed his love more to this child, and he likewise gave him a nice, beautiful coat. Oh, parents, take care with your children. Necessary to get on our knees and ask God to give us wisdom and understanding, to rear them up in the right way. And there may be some amongst me that are listening to me and say, well, I've attempted as a parent to do this, but I must say, nothing has ever come of what I attempted to do. What has become of my children? Where are they? They've left the parental home. They've got married, and they don't come anymore under the word of God. They are living for the world. They are living for the flesh. How sad it is, my hearers, as we parents must express this. Solomon says, rear a child and teach it when it is young, and when it gets old, it will not depart from that way. But that's not always true. It's always not fulfilled in life. Many of you will agree with me in that.